Hello and welcome to Developing Perspective. Developing Perspective is a podcast discussing news of note in iOS development, Apple, and the like. I'm your host, David Smith. I'm an independent iOS and Mac developer based in Herndon, Virginia. This is show number 107, and today is Wednesday, February 6th. Developing Perspective is never longer than 15 minutes, so let's get started. So far off the bat, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to all the people I met out in Macworld. That was a pretty awesome time. It was great to connect with a few listeners and just generally people I met there. That was a really fun time, and I'm glad to have had that. And so I just wanted to mention that on the show, and it was definitely special to me to have people try and reach out and make sure they can connect with me who listen to the show on a regular basis and to hear kind of the part that it plays in their life and where they listen to it and how they found it and so on. So that was really cool. Thanks. All right, so I'll move into the actual topic now and talk about I'll have two. And the first one I want to talk about is a slightly topical one, and it deals with iOS versions. And this is a topic that I've brought up many times across the show. I'm sure if you go back, I've talked about it probably, two or three times. And it's something that always, seems to be kind of coming up. And with the official public release of iOS 6.1 about a week ago, it kind of, is more timely again. It's something to be thinking about and seeing and looking at how that has worked and how that impact that it's been having on iOS adoption and what that could mean for us as developers. And so basically looking through all my logs, actually across all three of my apps, across audiobooks, Check the Weather, and audiobooks, the iOS adoption is fairly similar, which is gives me some comfort. And basically what I'm seeing right now is iOS 6.1, after about a week, is about 50% of people, which is astonishing that the 50% of people are on the latest version of an OS within about a week of it being released. And then about 20% of people, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more, depending on exactly the app, are still on iOS 5, with a essentially nominal amount of people still on iOS 4.x. Practically, at this point, the only version of iOS 4 that matters is iOS 4.3, because that's the minimum version that you can easily support with a build that also supports iOS 6, given the new kind of changes in Xcode and the way the SDK builds. So generally, at this point, it looks like iOS 4 should be dead to you. You really don't need to worry about it too much. If you don't have a compelling reason to take it out, I always kind of struggle with that. If you're doing an update that doesn't do anything that would benefit from something in iOS, from reducing something from iOS 4, then by all means, don't feel like you need to take, sort of vindictively or whatever, pull it out and remove support from that customer. But I think at this point, any new app for sure, and certainly anything existing, if anything in iOS 4 is holding you back, it's a very small percentage. It's, maybe up to 2 or 3% of users I'm seeing. And the reality is, if that's doing anything that has impacts your velocity, impacts your speed or your ability to deliver features, or even your just desire to deliver awesome features, it's probably a good thing to just kind of take a step back and pull that out. The challenging part, though, for me is I'm looking at those stats and trying to think about when I would be able to switch to iOS 6 exclusively. And I think it's a little too soon for me, for the most part, especially for the apps that have a fairly large established audience. And that's a very conservative approach. That's not something that is necessarily needed. That is just the very conservative kind of it's a very conservative approach of not wanting to annoy my users for reasons that they don't need to know about. For me, the biggest improvements in iOS 6, there's all kinds of cool stuff that it does, but primarily the one thing that it does that is very, very helpful is at ability to do attributed labels, which lets you do a lot more in terms of styling and a lot of stuff that used to be really annoying and hard to do. You can now just attribute a label and put that into your app and make things look better and adapt accordingly. And that's one of the things that I would love to be able to do across all my apps in all different places. The reality is the approach I've taken, for better or worse, is to just not attribute the text on iOS 5 and attribute it on iOS 6, which means that basically my UIs don't look as good on iOS 5. And I'm consciously making a decision to do that I'm not going through the work that it would take to have a similar and exact UI on both platforms. Instead, I'm just saying iOS 6, which is the vast majority, it's the 80% of people, will have a nice, beautiful experience. If you're on an older device, if you're running iOS 5 or for whatever reason you're still there, you're going to have – it'll look good, but you're going to have bolds or italics or emphases in the same way. And so that's kind of how I've taken it. And I think broadly speaking, that's a reasonable approach. I think whenever I think about it, I would rather support a device or a iOS version in a way that is not perfect but sufficient. You know, and you don't want to make it so that it's crashing. You don't want to make it obviously so that it's having diminished functionality. But if it's not as good in some ways, then that seems like a better trade-off to me than it being than being able to not run that app at all on that platform. And you know, maybe you could make the argument that, well, if we all start requiring iOS 6, more and more people will move to iOS 6. And that may be true. I think the hardest part for that specifically right now is with the iPads and the way that it's a very complicated situation, I think, that Apple finds themselves with dropping support for iOS 6 on the iPad 1. And the reason for that, I say that, is because cell phones, or iPhones in general, have a built-in refresh model that roughly every 2 years people will update their iPhones. I think that's a fair assertion, or at least it's likely that a substantial amount of people will. And my my version stats bear this out. They tend to be faster updating than on iPads. iPads, however, have this feeling of being a personal computer. And I mean, if you've seen anybody with an old, probably like 5-6 year old MacBook, you can realize that people will hold on to those for much, much longer and expect to be able to be the useful lifespan of it to be much longer. And part of that's coming from a higher price point, but also just the way that people tend to react to that kind of a bigger, a more – it feels like a bigger, fuller computer. And so I don't think that those first-gen iPads are going to be going anywhere anytime soon. They're not a huge percent of the market. I mean, certainly they're not it's not like they're the majority of users or anything like that. There have been plenty of years and plenty of versions since then. But because they're out there and those users will never be able to update, I think it's going to be very difficult for me to pull off dropping iOS 5, at least for a little while. Maybe it's this fall would be where I could drop it off. But I think for all my next updates, my new things, it's going to be iOS 5 and up. And generally, so far, I've found that to not be too constraining in most ways. But I wish I could do better. iOS 6 worked on the iPad 1, and I feel like that would have made a dramatic impact on this. But it is where we are, and like I said, at the very least, having 50% of people on the latest OS within about a week of it launching is fantastic and unprecedented, as far as I know. I mean, it's a great platform to be on in that way, and I just have the reluctance to take full advantage of that. Probably, maybe at my own detriment, just because I feel like it's antagonistic to my customers, which is the last thing I ever wanted to do. All right. The second topic I wanted to talk about a little bit is probably just a recommendation, and then it's a little bit of a discussion. So first, as a recommendation, if you're the kind of person who finds this show interesting, if you are a independent iOS developer, if you're someone in the iOS or Mac development areas, a business side of that, whatever, if you find this show useful, I can strongly recommend the Identical Cousins podcast, which is between Brent Simmons and Michael Simmons, and they talk about many of the same kind of things I talk about here. They talk about them in different ways and in different levels, and it's a more traditional hour-long-ish podcast, but I can't recommend it enough. I've really been enjoying getting into it, and it covers a lot of the more practical parts of being of making software, of doing it, and it's great to hear from two guys who have been doing this for so long and have been consistently successful for so long. And that's, I think, the key for when I hear them giving advice, it's rarely advice that is coming from a place of speculation. Which, if in all honesty, a lot sometimes that's where I'm coming from. I haven't been doing this for long enough to have made all the mistakes that someone who's been doing it for longer has, and so I certainly trust that a lot more, and so I'd strongly recommend getting into that. And especially, I'd recommend listening to the most recent episode, wherein Brent Simmons announced that he was going to be going indie again. And by that, I mean he is someone who, if you've been around in iOS and Mac development for any period of time, you'll know him. He was the original author of Mars Edit, Net Newswire, recently of Glassboard, and is going back to working on his own stuff again. And as someone who does that professionally, it's really exciting in the sense of there's just a certain amount of, of justification or of encouragement that someone who's, that people who are giving up potentially more, maybe like, more stable things and still feel like there's a lot of opportunity in the independent software market, that there's, it's not the kind of thing that's been overrun entirely by big companies, or you need a large, but you know, large teams and large budgets in order to do interesting work. And the strongest part of this, and this is an article I'll link to in the show notes, talking about where Brent's talking about how he, why he made this decision and exactly sort of where he's heading from here. And the big part that resonated very strongly with me was that he said he has two goals and why he's going independent again. And that's one, he wants to make great software on his own. And two, he wants to make great software with other people. And I think that's a fantastic summary of what it is to be an independent developer. And if those two things aren't what don't interest you, aren't what your core driver is, it's probably not for you. I get contacted periodically from people who are talking about going independent and kind of what that's like. And often you can kind of get a sense for somebody who's coming at it from, they think that it's a way to make good money. It's a way to make a living. It's a way to cash in on an opportunity created by whatever app store it is, or those types of things. And if those are your motivations, they're perfectly reasonable and understandable things. I mean, it's a perfectly valid thing to want to be well compensated for the work you do. I doubt that being an independent software developer, though, is for you. There's a lot of headaches. There's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of parts to it that aren't necessarily optimized when you're just one person by yourself doing independent work. And or a very small team would probably have the same characteristics. But being small and independent, what allows you to do is you can focus almost entirely on making great software, on focus on quality, focus on building the products that you're proud of, focus on building the things that you want exactly the way you want them. You don't answer to anybody else. You have full responsibility for the consequences, both positive or negative, of what you build. And so I find it to be very freeing in that way to be independent. There's nobody else who I can blame, and there's no one else who can take credit. And that's really nice on the pluses and minuses as things go. And then secondly, his second point, which was interesting because it's not something that I don't often think about and something that I don't often emphasize when I think about why I do what I do and how much I like what I do and those types of things, is making great software with other people. But it's interesting and true that I've probably worked with a more diverse group of individuals since going independent than I ever did when I had a corporate job. Whenever I had a corporate job, I would tend to be in a team and I would work with that team, and I would, I've worked with some great guys and some great organizations. And the problem is, though, you tend to be not siloed necessarily, but you'd work with the same group of people over time. You know, you're working in a project, you're working in a team, you're working in a division, whatever it is, it's narrow, and that can be a great group of people. But that group of people isn't varied as often. Whereas since being going independent, the number of times I've worked with just different people seems like it's constant. You're always working with a new designer, a new developer. If you do consulting, you'll be working with different teams. You'll be working with different other developers if you're collaborating on a consulting project. And the flexibility that creates is great. It means that you can experience such a variety of things. And that variety, I think, really enriches the experience that you have and the skills you have, that every single person has something unique to teach you. And by experiencing such a wide variety of people and their skills, I think it ultimately makes you substantially better as a result. And so I just couldn't second that farther, that stronger, that if you want to be independent, the best reasons is because you want to make great software on your own, that you have this individual drive and desire to make awesome things, and that you want a varied group of people who make awesome, who have that same drive and determination that you get to work with, and you have that privilege of learning from and improving from that experience. All right, that's it for today's show. As always, if you have questions, comments, concerns, or complaints, I'm on Twitter @_DavidSmith. AppNet @DavidSmith. You can email me @David@developingperspective.com. And otherwise, I hope you have a great week. Happy coding, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.